Just Not Good Enough with Chaz House on FUBAR Radio.
Ollie, welcome to Just Not Good Enough. Where were we? We were talking about your South African office before we went on air. Mm. And you got some people out there, and but you've never been.
Yes.
So how does that work?
Well, you can remote work nowadays, right? So the pandemic had its ups and downs, I guess, and being able to liaise and work with teams overseas and internationally is more accepted generally now. So it's not a huge issue. In fact, the culture out there is as good as the culture in the UK from an office point of view. It just so happens I haven't actually been out there yet.
But I'm a bit an old-fashioned person.
I know you are. Look at you.
Oh, hold on. This is super dry. Top to toe.
Says it all.
I know it does. Yes. Well, let's move on quickly. But the people there, don't they think, well, who the hell is this guy who owns our business? Yeah, who's paying our wages?
I don't think they do, to be fair, because, well, I mean, we have a team, we have managers, we have line managers. I don't think they think that. I think they are accepting that I can't be out there because, well, the reality is I'm so busy over here, and I will try and make the time to go out there when I can. There's not been any issues at all.
Okay.
In fact, we're hiring more people out there because it's working so well. So, yeah.
That's funny because I'm having my website built at the moment.
Yes.
By a guy who lives in Canada.
Okay.
And I've never, in fact, it's to do with FUBAR, actually.
Yeah.
And he sort of semi-works for FUBAR. And I've never met him, but we had a Zoom and I met him for the first time.
Yeah.
Met, whatever that means.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't feel the need to go and fly to Canada, although that'd be quite nice, actually. But that's it's a slightly different relationship, though, isn't
it? I'm fine with it. I mean, you can get so much more done now by having remote teams or working virtually or whatever it may be.
It's good for the planet.
Good for the planet, good for the diary, good for everything.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, good for your mental well-being.
We work from home, flexibility, all that sort of
stuff.
So, yeah, well up for that. But we haven't had any issues whatsoever.
Do you have twats at work?
Do we have twats at work? What would you define as that?
Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Okay, see how I scooted around that in case you
I
were
did.
Gonna...
Yes.
Yeah.
By the way, you can say anything you like on
Tuesday, Wednesdays and Thursdays. Do we have that? No, we just work through the week.
No, but Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays are the office days.
Oh, no, we're fully flexible.
Okay.
So we have a core day of Wednesday, typically, is the one that we advise people to come in on. And then either side of that, be it Monday, Tuesday, be it Thursday or Friday, they can come in if they want to. They don't have to, but they have to find 2 days across the week.
Skirting off and, you know, early Fridays.
To be early Fridays, potentially, late Thursdays.
Do you mind?
I don't care as long as the work gets done.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
I think they can, and they can work wherever they want and do it however they want, as long as deadlines and KPIs and everything else are kind of met.
Yeah. Okay, right, so.
Go on.
I want to go back to the beginning, actually.
Right.
I've been teasing you, actually, haven't I, throughout the week.
Yeah, I wanted some chains and to be tied up.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a damn good thrashing.
I know it's a yellow and black logo, but it's a different kind of website.
Yeah, you notice the logo itself is a raised finger, which is...
No, it isn't.
Yeah, no, I think they need to do something about that, Yasmin. because it's not clear enough, is it, that it's a raised finger? It looks like just like a sound bar.
No, it's clear now you've told me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that demonstrates the irreverent nature of the radio program.
Right? Okay,
so but I want this to be a two-way process,
right?
Because I'm going to ask you some questions that I think I'm hoping actually might make you a little uncomfortable.
Good.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But I want you to do the same. Nobody's actually done it to me, and I really want to because I think you say better things when you're actually uncomfortable and you're pushed into a place. So if that's okay,
fire away.
Okay. Now then, I'm going to go right at the core of this because on your CV and your bio, you talk about dyslexia, dyspraxia, ADHD.
Yes.
But it was something you said to me the last time we met, which is about autism.
Mm.
And that's not in there. Now,
yes.
How do you deal with all this stuff going on?
It's a lot of stuff, isn't it? I guess it's because that somewhat summarizes all of the stuff if you just claim
it does.
Autism, right?
Yeah.
So I guess if you're looking at the website, they're all in there individually from an SEO point of view.
Possibly the website, but not on your the things that
you
sent
me. The buy, the piece. And I guess that's because... that's such a generic term, autism, right? And it can mean so many things.
Yes, it is.
If you go into dyslexia or into dyspraxia or into ADHD, then there is a a narrative around each one of those individually, whereas autism is like, yeah, but what? If that makes sense.
Yeah, but so I'm going to get this wrong because I'm not an expert here, but yeah. the dyslexia dyspraxia is numbers and letters, essentially.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, yeah. Language and fine motor
language,
skills, et cetera,
yeah. And then your ADHD is about attention.
Yes.
Yeah, and being hyperactive, which you are.
Yes, yeah? Yes.
But autism is about behaviour.
Indeed, but there's behaviour that correlates to dyslexia and dyspraxia, hence being so bad at school in some ways and such like.
Yes, I'm going to come on to that.
So it's within the spectrum is what it is. It's not necessarily at the top, it's not at the bottom, it's not in the middle, it's somewhere within that.
So would you call yourself autistic?
I guess. I never have. I've always just used dyslexia and dyspraxia because when I was diagnosed at school, that is what I was diagnosed as having.
Right.
So I guess that's what I've always had. I just know it is on the spectrum. To be fair, I haven't looked into it in a huge amount of detail because I think people can get somewhat distracted over titles.
Do you not want to... Yes, agreed. Titles, I agree. But do you not want to understand what's sort of going on in your
head? I do. And the dyslexia and the dyspraxia bit, I have understood more because yeah. I went through occupational therapy and had a practitioner or some individual that was helping me through that. So I kind of get that bit. The ADHD bit is something that over the last few years I've been looking into more so. But I've kind of just accepted it and gone, well, that's just how I am. I have my coping mechanisms and this is how I get on with life.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to come back to coping mechanisms yeah. in a moment. So let's go all the way back then to seven. No, not seven. Seven schools.
Seven schools, yes.
Yeah, so okay. You were military family, yeah, moved yeah. around internationally.
Yeah, well, internationally to the extent of Germany and Scotland. So we didn't go to Cyprus or any of the nice
places.
Well,
the Scots would probably think it is international.
Well, I was born in Scotland, Chaz.
Were you?
I lived in the Mullach Entire for 3 years.
Did you?
I did, yeah.
Can you
yeah.
sing this song?
I can't, no.
No, don't.
I can't.
No,
but,
don't.
it was literally when I was born, left at age three, so I don't remember a huge amount.
Right, okay. Lovely part of the world, though.
Very pretty. Have been up there since, yeah. Very nice.
Yeah. So that must have been really difficult for you as... Presumably, it was from when you started with three. You left at three then, and then started travelling with your parents.
Left Scotland at three. Went to Germany until six, then came back to the UK, and then sort of moved around.
Right. So you've changed schools. You've had seven schools, haven't you?
Essentially, yeah. Whether that was through the move of being in the military, or whether that was just simply because the school wasn't right, or I wasn't right for the school. Maybe the school wasn't. Maybe the school was fine. Maybe I wasn't right for that.
Well, no. Because I'm going to ask you, what level of support did you get at that really early age?
Varying across the school. So I guess as I went into... So primary school, I can remember very vividly when I was in year 4/5 to year six, we were going through our SATs exams and such like, and the head teacher was called Mr. Giles, and the school was tiny. It was a 45-student school. It was in the village that we ended up living in. And... I was
mixed ages in class.
Mixed class. Yeah. But it was such a small school. It was pretty much just the village, so everyone was kind of friends of the family, whatever else.
Yeah.
And I wasn't very good at education in terms of reading and writing and such like, and had to do these SATs. And I kind of threw up a fuss and didn't want to do them, and got angry and upset and whatever else that comes with, I guess, as a child, not wanting to do these things. And this is prior to being diagnosed with anything, frankly.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mr. Giles said, just don't do them. And I was like, okay, cool. So they were pretty accommodating.
Really?
He said, just don't bother doing them. They don't really mean anything at that point, really.
Actually,
they're not going to get you anywhere in life. They might help with going to secondary school and whatever else. Anyway, so I didn't do my SATs. I was like, okay, cool. So they were quite open. They were quite a free-spirited school. You could kind of really wear whatever you wanted to wear to the school. There wasn't really a uniform and such. And then after that, I went to a couple of other schools from year seven onwards, which varied in support from... Really supportive at the boarding school I went to, which was specifically for those with learning difficulties. It was called Breeden School in Tewkesbury.
I didn't know that was a specifically...
Yeah, specifically for special needs and learning difficulties and such like.
Wow.
So, for instance, that school, instead of doing a maths class, yes, you'd do that, granted, but you'd also have practical classes. So they were they had a working farm. The school was a big estate. They had a working farm. So every Wednesday you would have to do some farming activity, whether that was engineering and fixing tractors, whether that was mucking out pigs, or whether that was, you know, doing whatever
you
do.
Sounds a lot of fun, that does.
In hindsight, it should have been, but I just hated it because it was school. And every single school that I went to, irrespective of how good it was or how fun it was or how beneficial it could have been, because there was a system, I hated it. So I never really excelled. And that's kind of, I guess, why, you know, I went to comps as well as private and everything else, and that's why I ended up with a couple of D's and one A in art. That was it.
At GCSE.
At GCSE.
It says you only got one GCSE.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, the D's are not really passable for getting employment.
Are they not? That's a CSE in my terms.
Exactly.
I got a CSE French, but anyway, that's another story.
Oh, did you? Yeah. I mean, I got kicked out of French in year
did
8.
You? Did
I banned
you?
From French, in fact. just because I was so distracted by the fact that I didn't know English, let alone learning another language, that I ended up making paper planes, got kicked out, and ended up speaking to the deputy head on first name terms for every French lesson thereafter because I sat in his office for the rest of the year. His name was Trevor.
That's not a bad result, actually.
His name was Trevor. Yeah, it was perfectly fine, actually.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. So, did you get expelled from any school?
No, I didn't get expelled. And that's because I left prior to
because
to
your parents moved
rid of,
around.
Essentially. Parents moved around. Parents are very supportive. So, whenever something was going wrong, parents would come in and fight to one's corner, rightly or wrongly, I guess. And I guess I had that ability to go, actually, I don't want to be here. And they were open enough to go, okay, let's find you another school or whatever.
Had you been diagnosed, whatever that means?
Been diagnosed for early secondary school, I guess, give or take.
So what's that? It's about 13, 14?
Yeah, roughly, roughly.
Right. Okay.
And Wycliffe was a very good school. It was a private school, but that was a standard school. Just anybody could go there, sort of thing. It wasn't specific for special needs. Good sporting school. Hindsight, could have stayed there. Didn't really get on with it. But they had lots of support mechanisms. And it was kind of an emerging thing at the time. People kind of got dyslexia, they kind of got dyspraxia, but they, you know, you'd get extra time in exams, you'd get a writer or a scribe or whatever, but you'd still somewhat be segregated. And that's the irony, I think, or the difference now at schools is you aren't segregated and put into a different classroom or given this person needs to have help, for instance. It's more accepted generally.
Yeah.
I can remember for a lot of what I was doing in English, literally having someone next to me who was writing, but also being put into a different class to do the exams, when actually it just felt a bit removed, if that makes sense. So you kind of had a label on you to say this person's not necessarily like us, which didn't massively bother me, but I can see that it could bother people.
So how did it bother the other people that you were with, your mates and so on? I mean, how did they deal with that?
I don't know, Chaz, really, because I don't speak to anyone from school.
Did you not sort of recognise it at the time? You maybe
I don't think I did. I wasn't that self-aware, I don't think. I think only in the last 10 years or so have I become aware of just how kind of good I had it and how stupid I might have been in terms of not accepting that actually everything was there for me to excel. I was just the troubled child, if that makes sense.
And
saying, oh, I don't like it, so I want to go to another school. Because I'd been to so many schools beforehand, I thought that was the norm, if that makes sense.
Yes,
if you don't
like it, just
change it.
Yeah.
Whereas actually a lot of people just had to put up with it, you know.
Yes, because if you are not with parents who move around, you are stuck with the school. And unless the school is providing the right level of support, some do, some don't, as you've already said, then you can either get lost or actually it'll help you.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, I went to a boarding school, and in theory that boarding school should have been perfect. You could have stayed there, parents could have moved around, there'd have been no issues whatsoever. Fine, happy days. But the reality is I just wanted to keep changing to try and find something better. And I wonder if, in part, that was not just because of the dyslexia and dyspraxia, but also the ADHD and the lack of attention and the lack of wanting to just stick with the norm, which, if you then dial it up and look at where we've gone over the last 10 years as an individual, but also as a business, I guess that change is somewhat stuck with me because I constantly look for new things to do. You and I, you know, we've done stuff together over the pandemic and such like. And
I'm going to come on to that.
That's because, in part, there was the want to do something else.
Yeah.
The attention to...
But that's very motivating for you, isn't it? And it's a big drive.
To do other stuff.
And energy. Yeah, just to find
100%.
Something else.
100%. I guess I like risk, I like fun, I like change, I like to do things that aren't necessarily comfortable. But arguably, I guess that's somewhat ingrained in the fact that I've always just changed every 3 years in my life period. Like, I've never stayed in a house for longer than 3 years. In fact, even in my adult life, 5 years is probably the longest, and that was only because we couldn't sell the bloody thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've just bought another house, moved into that, and been there for, 5 months?
And oh,
there's
right,
a sort of
okay.
3 to 5 year plan to stay there and move
How
again.
How does your wife think about that?
Well, she's my girlfriend at the moment.
Okay.
So far, so good.
Okay, sorry.
It's okay. She is fine with it. I mean, she's invested. We bought it together. It's the first property we bought together.
Right, okay.
So she's as invested in it as I am.
Okay, where was I going to go in then? So, the ADHD.
Mm.
Right.
Mm.
I mean, that is attention deficit, right?
Hyperactivity disorder.
Hyperactivity, yes. I think I've got the AD bit, but I don't think I've got the...
The hyper bit. No. Well, there we are. Okay.
So I find it very difficult to concentrate on things, yes. And I will pick something up and have a go at it and not finish it, put it down and do something else.
Yes.
How if that's what you yes. have as well, and I suspect you do,
yes.
how does that fit with being an entrepreneur then? Because right. because you're always looking for something else, but you're like a steamship going through the water. You know,
yes.
you're looking for everything to take on board, and then you throw things off the back of your boat mm. because you're not interested in it anymore.
100%. And I guess in business, it's somewhat good to fail fast. You know, and I think being having ADHD, you go into something and you throw your all at it from day one. You'll come up with an idea and you'll go, that idea is the best thing in the world. And I'm going to go straight into that. I'm going to chuck everything at it, be it money, be it time, be it brain power, whatever the hell it is. And you'll give it the best possible shot of it succeeding or it not succeeding, but you'll give it 110% for a period of time. Then you'll get bored, granted, but arguably if it succeeds, you won't get bored. And you'll work out a way of working around that and getting other people to help you out on that journey. You know, for instance, the business, Pinpoint Media, that we've got at the moment, I put everything into that at university. I shot videos. I came up with campaigns and such like for clients. It worked. And then I hired someone immediately to do the filming because I hated doing the filming. As soon as there was cash, I didn't take the cash myself. I hired someone to do that for me. And it's the same principle, I think, is you will put everything into it. It might succeed. If it does succeed, great. You'll find other people to help you on that journey. And you'll step back and do the things you really want to do. Because if I don't believe in it or I'm bored of it, then I'm not going to put my all into it. And it's pointless as far as I'm concerned.
You start off saying, this is a great idea, right, yeah. off we go. And then if it starts to look a bit suspicious, you sort of hand it over to somebody else to run, and do you still stay involved and engaged?
Yeah, I do. So I think I'm quite a good ideas person. Execution I can do, but sometimes it gets to a point where actually it's better to have someone more stable doing the execution.
Yeah.
Which is why we have ops and finance and such like in the business, right? Because the finance bit is, whilst fine, something I don't enjoy, so I'm not going to put the attention into it to get it right.
Well, no, I've noticed that.
Have you?
No.
Why? What have I done?
No, don't get all sensitive on me.
What have I done?
Keep going.
So I guess that the reality is there are always better people around you, genuinely. I can come up with ideas. I've got the passion. I've got the ability. I've got the want to make something bigger than the sum of its parts. But I'm not really necessarily the person to do the minutiae execution, if that makes sense, of the smaller job.
I agree with that bit about there's better people around you.
Yeah.
And I'm a crap accountant, frankly, even though I've been a finance director, which is encouraging.
You floated the company though, Chaz. Yes, that went pretty well.
Oh yeah, but that was all right. I was just talking.
That was, yeah. Yeah.
But then what you do is you realise where your weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. And you fill the gaps through recruitment. Yes. So I recruited probably one of the best accountants that I could get my hands on.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, I didn't have to worry about it. I know somebody else was dealing with it.
Exactly.
So, but how then does that translate into your management style?
In terms of me managing people or me managing myself?
Let's start with the other people. Yeah. Because if you set up an idea and then you're like a Gale.
Yeah, not brilliantly is the answer, Chaz.
Okay, go on then.
Genuinely, I always, always, always have individuals say to me, you're going too quickly. Can we just talk about this? Can we do this? You're throwing too much at me. And I guess for me, I find it a lot easier when there's a lot of stuff happening for me to be able to just get on with life. If there's nothing happening, I get really quite bored. Whereas a lot of other people like to be methodical. So in terms of how I manage people, I have had to learn over the last 10 years or so how to manage people through people just getting cross with how I'm managing them. Saying, you haven't told me this, you haven't explained this, you haven't given me the time to do this, I can't work that quickly.
How do you react to that?
In the first instances, in the moment? I just get annoyed. I'm just like, well, it's not that difficult, I'll just do it. A prime example, even though I say over the last 10 years I've learned this, we were doing the SLT meeting the other day.
A senior leadership team meeting.
And I was like, I knew, because we changed the structure, we just patched in a board of directors and such like, so we had this kind of slightly more rigid way of producing this board pack or this SLT pack that we hadn't done before.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was trying to delegate it to the six guys that were supposed to be building it, and not through their fault at all, but the way that I'd communicated it to them, it wasn't necessarily clear enough, and I was like, forget it, I'll just do it. And my PA told me off. She's like, you cannot do it, because you're never going to be able to let go.
Yeah.
So I didn't. The worst thing I've found
is my wife asked me to do things.
Yeah.
Right? And then if I don't do it instantly, she'll go and do it herself, and that really pisses me off.
Yeah, I know.
Don't ask me. If you want me to do it, don't ask me, and then go and do it yourself. What's the point?
The irony is, at home, I'm very good at delegating. So at home, I won't.
What does your partner think?
Well, she's not overly pleased with the, well, why do you keep delegating to me? And she even says to me, you're very good at delegating and you're very good at just passing things off to other people.
Is there a distinction between delegating and dumping?
Yes, I think there is. I think delegation is something you do with a deadline and an action, whereas dumping is something you just go, yeah, whatever, and you don't really care much about it. You'll dump your receipts, you know, on someone's desk and go, just sort those out. But you'll delegate something that is actionable for a time.
For a point. It's a fine line, isn't it? It's a blurred line.
I don't
dump
too much, to be fair. I try to delegate through deadlines.
Okay.
As much as I can.
So how do your team, you mentioned a little earlier about your team reacting to you.
Yes.
And they get cross. So what have you learned from that about yourself you need to do something differently?
I find it easier to communicate in person than over email when delegating something, because you can talk around it rather than what I would do, which was just send it over in an email. And it might be very blunt, even though it's not meant to be blunt. It just seems blunt. So they get the wrong end of the stick. They get their, you know, heckles up on the back of their neck or whatever. And then it's not proactively done. Whereas having a conversation is much, much easier. So I always try and have that in-person conversation first. That's the first thing that I learned was that, and I thought it was more efficient just to write a load of emails, schedule them or send them, and everything would get done. But actually that clogs people's inboxes up. They then get stressed because they've got a shed load that's just suddenly landed on their desk. So they're not then operating at their maximum capacity.
And there's inverted commas, snotty email from you.
Exactly, yeah. And whenever, and I get told this on the regular, and I should have definitely learned, but whatever you say as a CEO or as a founder, or as an entrepreneur, to people that you are hiring or growing a business with, will resonate and send shockwaves, irrespective of if you mean it to or not. So if you go, well done, it means a lot to them. If you say that's not brilliant, even though it might just be ever so slightly wrong, it means that they've done they think they've done a really bad job and they get really upset.
The word disappointing is really, really powerful.
And I, to be fair, I don't use the word disappointing that often, but if I was feeding back on something and I was like, well, it's not as good as it could be, even that to them gets taken on or gets taken to heart, right? So I've had to learn, and I still am learning, and I'm not perfect in any way, how to communicate without demoralizing or overinflating something, if that makes sense.
So do they know about you, what you're like?
Yeah, I'm speaking openly.
Because you are, I can say you're very, very open about it. So they know. So therefore, even though they might get something, they're getting a bollocking, although it's not a bollocking because you don't intend it to be, but that's how they perceive it. Is there a level of understanding in
there? Yeah, there is. And I'm very lucky. And I guess that's part of the communication piece. And that's why I'm so open about it, is because it's much easier just to say, you know, these are the trials and tribulations that I've been through and what I'm not suffering with, but have, because everyone else is also going through different things. And this is how I react to certain things. So within the business, we have every single person that starts in the company does an Enneagram test, basically, which sort of tells you where you are within reason on how you react when you're angry, how you react when you're happy, and how typically
I'd like to do that.
You should. You'd be fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's actually a score for you on there, but you'd be very interesting.
I'll be off the chart in some things.
In many ways.
Yeah, thank you.
So we do that, and that's good because it helps people understand how to communicate with individuals within the company, right? But a prime example was when I was sort of sat in this board meeting and we had this MPS score come back to us, which wasn't necessarily as positive as it could have been. And I kind of held my tongue and I was annoyed by it, and actually I see red very quickly, and then 30 seconds later I'll calm down and it'll be absolutely fine. But that is because if you look at the Enneagram, I'm a number 8. So that is essentially, if you're confronted with something that is bad, that you'll react straight away without much thought, and then you'll go, oh shit, that maybe wasn't actually the best way to react, and you'll forget about it and you'll just change and you'll be absolutely fine the day or the second or the minute after that. So they understand that within to a high level. And there's a number of other number 8s within the business, et cetera, who do
that'd be
the
interesting
same thing. And it's the same principle. When you and I were going through the pandemic and there was all this stuff happening with Jeff Bezos and whatever else, and, you know, we were losing things, we were winning things. But when we were losing things and we were just trying to have a conversation, one got infuriated through no reason.
I saw that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there was occasions where we were on a call.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it wasn't going particularly well at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, bless his cotton socks, the young entrepreneur got us into deep shit on that, actually. Mm. Actually, don't bless his cotton socks. That's the
burn the cotton socks.
Burn with his feet in it. it was just about to fall apart. And the opportunity was lost to make quite a decent return on this. And the commitment, the exposure was a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it, suddenly we realised that actually this isn't going to work, so how do we damage mitigate?
Yeah.
And I remember Fergus and you on the other end of the line, and you disappeared off camera.
Yep.
And all we heard was lots of shouting and swearing and bashing and crashing.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's because we were confronted with what was at the time, and actually in hindsight really was quite a significant issue, because we had such debt leverage, £500,000 worth of debt a week that we were trying to service.
Yeah.
And we essentially would have potentially made some pretty good money at the end of it.
Yeah.
Weren't going to make the money, still had to service the debt. You know, that was the most stressed I've ever been. And actually, even Ferg, my still business partner, will say that we genuinely think we had PTSD from that pandemic, because the sheer amount of crap that was going through what we were doing. You know, he was sick. He went through a complete mental breakdown.
Did he?
He had to go to counselling, because he was up every night speaking to China, speaking to America, dealing with our staff in the UK, dealing with this new business that we launched, servicing £500,000 worth of debt a week. He was a broken man. If it had gone on any longer.
I didn't know that.
You know, he went to the level of it not being a really. We should have just done nothing, and we'd have probably been in a better headspace than trying to do something. So he had a really bad time of it. I don't remember a huge amount of it, because as I suppose me individually, if something goes badly, I'm very good at compartmentalizing things.
You walk away from it, do you?
I forget about it. You know, if I have a really bad experience, like school, and there's been bullying occasions and whatever else, I will know that it has happened, but I can't recite when, where, or actually what happened. I'll just go, forget about it, put it under the rug, and crack on with it.
That's quite a skill.
It is, but it's also not brilliant. I mean, my dad once said, a problem shared is a problem doubled. And I think his military head suggests or says that just don't share the bad things, just deal with it, move on, compartmentalise, and get on with your life.
There's an element of sense in that, actually, because...
Yeah, I don't know if it's healthy or not, but I mean...
No, but the bit about problem shared is a problem doubled. Yeah, I mean, the number of people who I have spoken to who tell me about their problem because they're feeling bad, they go away thinking, actually, I feel okay now, I've told somebody about it, I feel shit.
I know.
Because all they've done is they've dumped it on me.
Yeah.
You know, and if you have any sense of compassion or care or whatever for the person that you've been speaking to, which generally is the case if you're having a conversation like that, it puts me in a bad place. And I'm thinking, I don't need this negativity around me.
I don't like negativity, periods, and that's why I try to, whenever there's a negative thing going on, just try and switch off from it. Emotions is not something I'm very good at anyway. I'll have people talk to me or confide in me about certain things over a beer as a mate or whatever, and I struggle massively to actually relate to anything that has any modicum of emotion. Not because I'm a horrible person, but just because I simply can't compute it. If that makes sense.
But it's you, isn't it? Do you feel emotions then?
I feel happiness and obviously anger and sadness and such like.
Yeah.
But I won't lose sleep over any of it. If that makes sense. I'll have ups and downs and peaks and troughs and whatever, but I'm not, I'd never feel like I've really hurt somebody or I've made their life better, if that makes sense.
Just
semi-flatline. I mean, there's a point at the time you do it, you go, that's great, but then you move on. Like, you get the peaks and the troughs of the emotion, but you don't get the sustained, I'm going to be a depressant or I'm going to be elated sort of thing.
Right.
And I've seen that with my friends and such, like, who are, you have been depressed.
Yeah.
And I cannot relate to it or talk to them, and I know that I need to talk to them to be there for them, but I'm like, I struggle to just talk to them and go, how are you, so what are you doing here, because I always try and find a solution. That's the issue. I'm like, yeah, but have you done this and like, yes, but it isn't working. I'm like, well, I can't help now then. Do you want a coffee? You know, it's just, I'm shit at it.
Wow
genuinely shit at it.
But presumably all your friends, your mates know that, do they?
Yes right. They do. So this is why we never talk about anything emotional.
No.
So it's with any emotion.
Football and beer and
not even football, because I don't know anything about football either.
Oh god,
beer I can do, but no, it's work. You talk to me about work, I could talk to you until the cows come home.
Yeah,
anything. I can talk to you about the markets. I can talk to you about politics, whatever, business. But you talk to me about empathy or emotion or well-being or an individual nuance. I just couldn't.
Do you get your medication at all?
No. Should I be?
No, I'm not saying you should. Well, actually, yes, but not the type I'm thinking of at the moment. I am, right. And similar to you, although not like you, but similar, I get, what it's done is it's taken off the top end of the high and taken off the bottom end of the low.
Mm.
So you said flatlining, and I resonate with that because I'm in a narrower band than I usually am.
Mm.
But actually, that's good news because the low is unbelievably low.
Yes.
And the high is euphoric, but very rare.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm quite comfortable here, and I am aware of things, but they do linger with me. Actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I'm lucky. Actually, I don't have the lingering per se, and I will forget things when I want to, in reality, forget them. Like that whole pandemic situation. Whilst it was shit and a lot of crap happened, it took me a while to deal with, and it was the hardest. That was the hardest thing that I've had to deal with. So it took me a good 6-8 months or so to actually get over the fact that we'd lost and buggered up what we'd buggered up. But I got over it, and now I can talk happily about it, and I can go, yeah, whatever, that's history. You know.
But it could turn out to be quite good, couldn't it?
No.
Why not?
Because you've seen what he said, and it's going through legals, and I'm not sure what we can say and what we can't say, but there'll be nothing in it.
Right.
Because it'll pay for the legal fees. They're not cheap lawyers, Chaz.
No, I know they're not, but there's enough in there for that, sure.
I don't know.
I've moved on, I must admit.
If it comes in, then I'll be truly baffled.
Yeah, because I think you lost more than we did, actually. I don't think we really
lost terms of the net return?
Yeah, in terms of the money spent.
Money spent, we put a lot of capital up front. Yeah. We hedged on that. But we learnt a lot.
Yeah.
I learned that. And I guess that's the reality. It's like money is irrelevant unless you do something with it that is beneficial to either you learning or to people or to growing a business. Do you know what I mean?
But there's limitations. In the bank. There's limitations for that, isn't there, though? Because you can't do it too often.
Lose money?
If
you lose more than you're winning, that's not good.
There's a magnificent insight from ex-finance director of Superdrive.
Don't lose more than you're making.
Don't lose, yes. Be careful with your pennies.
But I think the reality is you can get hung up on risking money. But if you risk money on something you believe in or something you learn from, then that's fine, even if it hasn't worked. I've put money into startups through angel checks, and they haven't worked, but the journey's been quite exciting.
Yeah. I think that's the classic example of a good entrepreneur. Because everybody says, well, entrepreneurs, the only thing you need being an entrepreneur is you've got to take risks.
Yeah.
But that's not true.
No.
What you have to do is take calculated risks. Yeah. And you mitigate your risks by only doing it bit by bit by bit. And I remember one of the reasons I got fired from Superdrive was for an IT system went wrong.
Right.
Right. But thank God, Julian didn't agree to my original proposal, which was completely change the whole IT infrastructure, right, which was a £10 million bill over 3 years. And he says, no, Chaz, no. What we'll do is we'll just do that bit.
Yeah.
And I said, I was quite disappointed, you know, but actually, as it turned out, he was right.
Well, there's instinct, I guess, as well, that comes with
it. A little bit. But, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs who, because they're so excited and enthusiastic and passionate about what they're doing, that they get carried away. But he has this capacity to be able to just sit back and think about it before saying yes or no.
Yeah. No, I get that. I'm very good at saying no, which I think is beneficial to genuinely making a decision, because some people procrastinate, some people say yes, but rarely do you say no.
Are you a people pleaser?
No.
You see, I am.
Are you?
Yeah, which is dangerous, because it's very, very hard to say no.
Yeah, me. I would let people down nicely, like I wouldn't be a cock about it, but I'm not in it to please everybody. You know, if that makes sense, I don't want to offend people. I don't want to piss people off. But I wouldn't say yes, we're going to do this just to keep them happy. It would be based on if it's the right or the wrong thing to do. You know, we've got within the business certain things that maybe I don't necessarily agree we should specifically be doing, but we're doing it because actually it's no skin off our nose or my nose. It makes them happy, so why don't we just go and do it? But then there's other things that don't make commercial sense that we'd say no to.
Yeah.
So it depends on what scenario you're in. As to if I'll just go, yeah, whatever, or to keep them happy, or no, for instance, I guess.
Okay, so just, I'm probably going to insult you now, but then
cool. Go for it.
It's normal.
It's normal.
It's normal for me and you.
Yes. Not a people pleaser when you're with me.
You're not a person.
Antagonist. You
know, anyway, yes, of course. I can't remember what I was going to say now. Oh, yes, I do. Yes, right. So what you've got, your condition at the moment, is something that you've had all your life, and you've learnt to deal with and manage it as best you can. You've still got way to go, but so fine, right?
Yeah.
Whereas for me, it's slightly different because mine clicks in like that. So I can be absolutely fine, and then all of a sudden I'll just go woomph, and I'll be down in the depths, which makes handling it and dealing with it a lot harder. Yeah, because I will know when it's coming, but sometimes it's a bit of a surprise.
Yeah,
and when it gets to that point, because I'm a people pleaser, right? I will people please, and then I'll catastrophize.
Yeah,
and I will sink way, way down.
Right,
and then they think they've upset me. They think they've pissed me off. Of course, they haven't. Yeah. It's just the way I'm reacting. So, do you think what you've got is easier than what I've got?
Well, mate, I don't know what you've specifically got. I've got in your head.
No, I know. That's a terrible question.
No, but do I think... I don't know. I guess for me it's such a consistent thing that you just deal with it on a daily, and you know it's never going to be better or really worse, if that makes sense. Yeah. To an extent. You're not going to have the peaks and troughs like you do.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's better and worse. It's just very, very different. And I guess I'm lucky because we discovered it. I say it. We discovered what dyslexia and everything else. Quite early on, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and so many people go through life going, why am I stupid? And actually, to be fair, I was dropped down a year at school. All this kind of stuff because they thought I was stupid, which is what stemmed us going through this occupational therapy piece. But I don't know. I don't think yours is better or worse. I think it's different.
Yes, I think, it's probably a better way of saying it than the way I did.
I don't think anyone would want either of them, but arguably they come with their benefits and they come with their negatives, I guess.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't have it, I genuinely don't think I'd be doing what I'm doing now.
No, that's interesting. Right, so because you started entrepreneurialism.
I guess that's a thing. Yeah.
At very, very early age with your sister.
Yeah, I did.
Selling veg in your village.
Yes, I did. Which was equally at the primary school. I didn't do my sats at. So it kind of shows you where my head was at.
That's great.
Yeah, it was fun. And actually, I think the most we made was 22 quid in a day. And it wasn't necessarily even selling it. It was telling people to buy it by not letting their car drive down the road until they did buy it. So it was somewhat like, you know, it was a small village, and I was very young at the time with my sister.
Well, you stood in the middle of the road.
Oh yeah, we stopped the car. You know when you go, you haven't been to Africa, but when you go over there, they wash your windscreen.
Then
they ask you for some money. Yeah. It was sort of similar to that.
We had that here a few years back, didn't we? That was quite prevalent.
Did we?
People at traffic lights.
Yeah, yeah.
Wandering around, either with a cup, you know, and a child under their arm, sad, of course, but or going around, and before you know it, they're going.
I know. And we weren't necessarily that aggressive, but it was very much. You'd see the car coming, and you go, "Stop! Would you like to buy some of our vegetables that we've grown here?" And we live over there, sort of thing. And it was all very lovely and English and sweet. And I remember there was these American tourists that came over because it was a quintessentially British village, right?
Yeah,
really Cotswoldstone, lovely thing. And these American tourists came over, and there was my sister and I next to this, what was essentially this small field, selling marrows and potatoes. And they took a photo of us, and I was like, that's really weird. It stuck with me. Obviously, I've never seen the photo, but it was like this English scene. There were two English cherubs, essentially, selling vegetables on the side of an English village.
Cherub.
Well, yeah, one, my sister, definitely. Yeah.
And, so did they buy anything?
I can't remember if they bought anything. I genuinely can't remember. I know we made about 20 quid.
I hope they bloody did. Quid at that age.
Good, isn't it? And I kept it all. I kept it all. So I didn't pay my mum and dad for the vegetables.
I didn't pay
my sister, no.
Why not?
Well, she was helping me. You know, she's my sister. It was minor.
Is that how you deal with your staff then?
No, they paid very well, remunerated properly.
Of course.
But my sister, different story, she didn't get paid.
Is she older?
Younger. So she was like, hopefully looking up to me going, oh yeah, one day I'll be like this.
Oh, bless her. What does she think now?
Well, she's had a child. She's beating me to that. Who, by the way, instead of buying or giving them a gift, I bought them cryptocurrency when they were born. I thought that was a cool thing to do.
That is very cool, yes.
When the child is born. Yes. She's very, very different to me. Academic, through and through. Like, very intelligent in that sense. Very by the book. Very smart, generally. She was always the overachiever. In school and
How did that make you feel? How did you deal with that?
I never really thought about it, I don't think. I mean, there's the sibling rivalry that there always is, you know, the hitting and the punching and the laughing and the running and the playing and the whatever else that comes with being brother and sister or whatever. It never really resonated. She always had friends over, though, which is something I never had. So she's made, and she's still maintained her friendship group. So she's going to their friends' weddings, all this sort of stuff from school. And I haven't got any friends from school.
Yeah.
All my friends are either from, weirdly, the village, which is just because we play on the same cricket team still, or from university, but not from school.
Okay, so, but you were, you've clearly got that entrepreneurial flair, haven't you? So in a sense of that, that is who you are. It's what you've always wanted to do, and you identified that quite early.
Yes.
So no exam results really to speak of. So you then went to university. How did you get to university if you haven't got the exam results?
So I did a BTEC at college.
Uh-huh.
In media production, so you didn't necessarily need to have great grades to do that. It was, I think it was something that either David Cameron or one of the politicians sort of said, which is the course that you do when you don't know what you're going to do, because it's just a bit of creative here, a bit of creative there. And it kind of was. There was people of all walks of life on that course that never actually went into doing media. It's just they didn't know what else to do.
Yeah, but they come out of it with a qualification, which gets them. It just demonstrates a certain level of thought and intelligence and academia
being
and all
able
that sort
to
of stuff.
Apply yourself to some sort of subject.
Exactly.
But I excelled in that because I found it fascinating. Like 3 years of working in media, TV, radio production, whatever it was, we had this like intensive 3 years and loved it. So I came out with a distinction, right? So I came up with the highest grade in the class. Doing so, it was the first time I've ever overachieved in life, really.
Wow. That, anyway, that must have been good for
you. It was good. And actually, I'm very good friends with George Butcher, who was the tutor whilst I was at college. And they invited me back to the college 3 months ago to open their new media centre as, as the guest of honour. So I have a plaque in there that says, Oliver Bruce, guest of honour, open this media centre. So I've gone from buggering up everything at school to going to college and getting the best grade within the class, then going to university because of the BTEC, but then being asked to open the media centre for disadvantaged children that want to go into media.
Wow.
So it's kind of like a full circle thing. But that's how I got into uni, was through the BTEC, through the distinction.
And what did you do there?
At uni,
yeah.
TV production. So I always wanted to get into television. That's why I ended up in media, because I thought, I want to be a presenter, I want to be on television. The only way to do that is to start your own production company. Rowan Atkinson, all those kind of people have their own production
company. Yeah, they do, yeah. But they get their production companies after they've done something. They don't,
there's a sort of nuance to getting it right, and I didn't get it right, which is kind of why I guess I ended up doing creative marketing or content marketing, which in hindsight was a very good place to be, but not necessarily a strategic decision. It was I wanted to produce stuff for television. And that's kind of how the business started. It was because I had a passion for video, for cameras, for making content. All of which I can't do anymore because the guys are so much better than me and the world's moved so quickly.
But you do a podcast, don't you?
I did a podcast. I don't have it anymore.
Oh, don't you? Why not?
Only because it was so time-consuming and it was so, it's now so diluted. We did it over the pandemic and we were top 5% in the UK, top 10, I think it was, on business podcasts, on Virgin Atlantic internationally, still on Virgin Atlantic. And it was great, and we had some really good conversations, really good, not necessarily leads, but just like relationships that were built from that.
What's the subject matter?
So it's called Success in the Mind, and it was all about overcoming the barriers of building a business that people don't necessarily see. So on LinkedIn, it's so subjective. You go onto LinkedIn and everyone's succeeding and making millions here and there and getting VC backing just by opening their eyes and whatever else. This isn't the reality. You have to overcome so much shit able to actually even make 100 grand, let alone millions, for instance, which people don't realise. But so many people want to go into business, but they think it's really easy to get into it. So this was to explain to people the reality of starting a company from the people that have done it. But it was launched in the pandemic, in parallel with pretty much what we were doing in the pandemic.
Yeah.
And off the back of the shit that we went through, that was why I wanted to talk to other people, to go, well, we've gone through a hell of a lot of crap here. Have you? And the reality is everybody has. And more sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was an interesting conversation that I think interested enough people to start to climb the ranks, which allowed us to get some really good guests on. We had, you know, Martin Sorrell from WPP, founders of Grind Coffee, come on. You know, we had Mylene Klass, of all people. She decided to come on because she started a business called My Supper Hero, and it grew. And then Virgin Atlantic decided to take it on, put it on their flights, and we're in the magazines and whatever else. And it was really cool, really good fun. But we stopped it.
Why? I know time is one thing, but it sounds such a good idea.
I had the passion for it for 3 years.
Yeah.
2.5 years. And we did a shit-hot job for 2.5 years. And then the business got bigger. We were going through this growth phase. We were going through this acquisition that we've just done. And the attention wasn't there for it because it had to be elsewhere to grow it, to get the EBITDA we wanted to get to continue this trajectory we wanted to be on. And there had to be casualties. And the casualty was the podcast. You know, it cost us 30,000-40,000 quid per series to do the podcast, right? Because we've got the team working on it from an edit point of view. Yeah. We've got my time for 2 weeks solid.
Yeah.
So it's not a cheap thing. Although there was no capital outlay per se, it was staff time that we had to invest in that, which in theory cost us money because they're on salaries, right? Yeah. So it was costly.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to suggest something. I'm looking at Yasmin now, producer. Why don't we swap seats when we do this again?
Okay.
Right? And I'll be on your podcast, but we'll do it here.
We'll do like a special.
Yeah.
I could bring my special microphone top.
Oh, no, you're not allowed to do
that. No, we've got to keep FUBAR.
Yes.
FUBAR with the finger.
FUBAR, yes, with the finger.
FUBAR with the finger. Okay.
Looking for a nod.
We can do that, whatever you want to do that.
Oh, it's not her decision. You'll be influential in getting that done. I think that's a great idea because I'd like to sit there.
Yeah.
And tell my story like you told yours.
I could, I'd happily do. Well, yeah, whenever.
Okay.
I can do that. That's not a problem at all.
Okay.
And we can air it wherever we want to air it.
Right. So let's move on. So Pinpoint Media, which is where you are now, your CEO.
Yeah.
How long has that been going?
Technically 10 years, but that's including 3 years in a bedroom at university. So do you know what I mean? Like, in reality, it's sort of 7 or 8 as a business.
Yeah, but that's all right.
Yeah.
And you've now got, 30 employees or something?
Well, we've got more now because we bought a business.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we're nearing 40 now. End of the year, we'll probably be pushing 50 odds.
What are you going to do with it? Because you say, you said earlier you're going to get bored and you're going to move on and something else. And,
yeah, we're growing it at the moment to a point where the EBIT is sustainable enough to either generate PE, for instance, and go into. Because I like the acquisition piece. That was really good fun. Having bought the business that we've just bought, I found that fascinating.
It is
quite
good. It is good. It's great.
It's great because you kind of pull it to pieces, then you put it back together, and then you go, well, this is how it's going to work now.
Yeah, and you see which bits are you going to keep, which bits you're not going to keep.
And we're still very much, and I don't know when this is there, but we're very much on that journey still. We've only had them for 8 weeks or so. So there's that whole cultural and integration piece that we're currently going through. But I like the idea of buying more businesses through PE because, if we get to the EBIT we need to get to, then we'll get a certain amount of PE that will get put into the business. Then we can actually put this business case together and go, okay, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So that's an idea. Equally, we are just growing year on year. We did 68% growth last year. We're targeting 25 this year. So a bit less, but that's because obviously it's relative because we're a bit bigger.
But 68% in your seventh year.
Yes.
Pretty good.
It is good. And I guess that was through strategic acquisition as well.
Actually,
that wasn't just top line,
organic
bottom line growth.
No,
That was through strategically acquiring. Albeit they're a lot smaller than us. So it's not as if we could have grown 500% by buying someone that's, five times the size.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They were smaller than us.
Do they know about your ADHD? Your
disability? Yeah, quite actively. So I'm amazed at how many people know about that and the podcast. So before anyone comes and works at the company, they always do their research, logically, but they always come, your podcast's great, or I didn't know you had this. And I've got a website, obviously, out there, but it's amazing how many people actually pay attention to it. Genuinely amazing.
That's quite encouraging, isn't it?
It is.
Because they're interested in you, and, if it is going to go through and you're going to end up being the owner of their business, then why wouldn't they?
Well, they should do their due diligence on me as much as I do it on them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To make sure that I'm a sensible person to be running what is essentially their paycheck.
Yeah.
People do. And I'm always amazed by people that listen to either the podcast or go, I didn't realise you'd done that. Because, it's their time they're spending looking into that.
Yeah.
Why bother?
Yeah, but sometimes a podcast can be relatively easy, can't it? Because you could be doing something else.
100%.
Like 100%. Driving or travelling or, gardening or whatever, So in that sense, it's accessible.
I had the weirdest experience the other month when I was in Padstow. I was going to Paul Ainsworth's pub, and I was just walking up the road to Paul. And Paul Ainsworth was going to come on the podcast, right? We said no to him because we were ending the podcast show, and I was like, it's a bit much admin. Anyway, so I was walking up towards his pub, and this random guy crossed the street and went, Oliver Bruce. And I went, yeah. And he was like, I was just listening to your podcast. I think it's brilliant. Just random guy. No idea who it was.
Really?
Yeah, so random. But anyway, so people clearly listen to these things. Have you had that yet, Chaz?
No.
You'll get that. You'll be walking out of here and there'll be paps everywhere.
Can you arrange that?
I can arrange that.
I mean, you're in media, you know, get a few, even if it's fake.
Yeah, I can do that. I'll
just do that. So I walk out and, you know, and
the receptionist thinks,
no comment. No comment. Yeah, yeah.
He's actually got a listener.
Yeah, it's usually, well, it's not me. I don't listen to my own things. I don't.
Yeah,
know.
I can't.
Do you listen to yours?
It. No, I don't.
No, really. I can't do it. I can't look at myself on screen. No. I can't do anything.
No, I used to, and then I kind of just stick to a certain thing in terms of what to say and what not to say.
I was interviewed on Head Torch. I don't know if you know Head Torch. It's in, I can't remember, I think it's in Worcester.
Okay.
And they're a mental well-being thing. Mm. And I saw a transcript of what I was, the interview, direct transcript. Mm. It was absolutely terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There was so many likes and because and you know, and you think, oh, for God's sake, that's not articulate at all.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I tend not to listen to them.
It's embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I guess, but arguably, people don't like to hear their own voice back. And what's the point? You've said it. You can't go back.
You know? No, that's true.
You can't go back.
That's true. So, do you have any regrets?
Do I have any regrets? Mm. Yeah, I guess I do have some regrets. In terms of how I've gone about doing things, I don't regret how I've got to here per se, because I've got to here, but I regret not doing things slightly differently and potentially getting here quicker, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, you've been very successful, haven't you? You've got a multi-million-pound business.
Yeah.
You know, you're what, 22?
22. I'm actually using hair growth serum now, so hopefully I'll start to look younger. Does it look good, Chaz? Does it look
good? I don't know. It's quite hard to see it from here.
Yeah, thanks. That's the right answer. If anyone wants hair growth serum, Hims is very good.
Hims, okay, generally. Right. Yes, because I don't need it. You know,
you've got a lot of hair for a man that's 75.
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
that's not my waist measurement either.
Yes, no, I guess it's subjective, really, because I always compare to other agencies and other people and other things that are out there, which is why I, again, started the podcast, so that there was a baseline of actually the reality. But I'd have done it very differently, I think. I'd have probably tried to raise some angel capital, some VC capital, or given away some equity for some money in some way, shape, or form, so that it didn't have to be grown organically, because the whole thing has been grown organically.
But that's the best way, isn't it?
It is the best way in hindsight.
Because you keep control of it.
Correct.
It's you and your brother, isn't it, Fergus?
So Fergus, in it, he's actually not even my brother. He's just coincidentally got the same surname.
Oh, you're joking. Even,
so I met him at university. He started.
No, I don't
business.
Believe that. I thought he was your brother.
Yeah, we'd have made
look alike.
We'd have made more money every time someone thinks that he's my brother if they gave us a quid. I guarantee it, because everybody thinks he's my brother. But I met him at university, he had an events business. I bought out my previous business partner as he was starting to fall out with his then business partner. So this was sort of 4 years, 5 years into the journey. And then Ferg bought into Pinpoint at that point. And then it's kind of gone from there, I guess. But we did it organically, and it's the best thing, you're right, because you have full control.
Yeah.
But I think we could have got there 3 or 4 years earlier.
But have you enjoyed it? Because you're very keen on enjoying yourself, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I've got to have fun. But I think I have enjoyed it. I think there's been tricky times. As there
some
is
reticence there, I note.
Yeah, I've put in a lot of hours, and I'm not sure necessarily how much difference that has made, or if that's just because I wasn't working efficiently. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'll go in on a weekend to just do stuff and sometimes procrastinate. So I think I'd have gone about things slightly differently.
So do you think you would have been more or less successful with or without all the neurodiversity you've got?
That's
an unanswerable question.
I think less successful.
Do you? I was about to say the opposite.
No, I
because
think
I think what it's done is given you drive, energy.
Mm.
It's like when I was working for Julian, my role.
No, hold on. So you're saying the same thing as me. I'm saying less successful if I didn't have it.
Oh, sorry. Yes. We are saying the same thing. Because when I was working with Julian, he's similar to you in the sense of his creativity and his drive.
And the amount of bangles that we were.
Funnily enough, I noticed that. Yeah, I better start, didn't I?
Wealth bands, that's apparently what someone called them.
Oh, is it? Well, no wonder
we
I haven't got any.
Like jewels.
Yeah, I know, it gets more every time. But his role was to be creative and drive the business forward. And my role was to sweep up all the crap that came after him. So I called myself a road sweeper, because that's what I was.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's the point, is that role works, those two roles work very
but
well
that's
together.
That's what Fergus is.
Exactly. I think that's, so he's sort of playing, he's like your road sweeper.
Well, so it's really interesting, because actually, Dad to go back to that, was in the military, quite by the book, great, fine, very methodical, did everything as you should. He then retires and then went and worked for a private company called Habu, going on this unicorn journey at the moment, potentially valued at $1 billion. Now he, so pretty good. He was number three. So what's really interesting in that scenario is that the founder of it, Martin, and the other founder, Paul, they're both introverts to a certain extent. They're highly intelligent. They're great at coding. They're great at being an entrepreneur. They've exited businesses before. Patched Dadin as chief of staff specifically, which is a military title I get.
Yeah.
But to specifically do the staff liaison, and in the term that you used, the road sweeping bit.
Yeah.
To make sure that Martin and Paul can go and do the visionary VC conversations.
Yeah.
And actually there's a level of methodical being, I guess.
Yeah, because what you don't want to do is stifle their creativity.
Exactly.
You need to, because that's with you. It's the way, it's almost the way you behave is why you've been successful.
Maybe. I guess there's an element of, I really don't know, to be fair. I've never analysed it in that sense. But I do get told there's, you might know him, Arthur Hindmarsh from Commercial Group. In fact, you will.
I know Commercial,
We also did some stuff with them in the Pandy. But he said the same thing. He was like, Fergus, you must be there to support what Oliver's doing, but you must let him just do what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And it's a really weird thing because it's almost like they're just going, let him go and have his fun in the sandpit and you just make sure he's okay.
Yeah, you
and
rake it afterwards.
Do you know what I mean? It's really weird. But
How does Fergus feel about that?
He's fantastic with things like that. Like, he does a lot of consultancy now for businesses.
But does he accept and acknowledge that is his
entirely,
role?
Entirely. Entirely. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, he's always said that that is his role.
So the two of you together is quite powerful.
Yeah, and it's serendipitous because it's just fallen that way. We didn't go, right, Ferg, you're going to come in to essentially sweep up the shit that I'm creating. And there have been some seismic issues that I've created that he has sorted out.
But isn't that a great way? Because I want to move on. We're not running out of time particularly, but isn't that a great way to manage mental health conditions, for want of a better word, in work? So you have the support of Fergus, your brother.
Yes, from another mother, literally.
Yes. Yeah. And possibly another father.
And that. I hope.
Yes. Yeah, that would be interesting. A revelation on air. So the two of you are exactly gelling, and you know their roles, and you understand each other. Wouldn't that be fantastic if you are a PLC board director and somebody understands that as well and is there to as a corollary?
But I think this is what makes it very, very good. And you should absolutely get him on here because he went through a fucking awful time. And actually, I was having a beer with him last night, and it was a year ago this month that he first told me that he was going through this really, really, really tricky time, which he'd kept under wraps for a while.
He had.
But it was getting to a point
When was it?
Oh, well, it started before, obviously, last year.
Yeah.
But he told me last year, and then it went through the motions of trying to...
I've known him for probably a couple of years-ish.
Yeah, you've been going on behind the scenes.
You see, that's one of the things that I'm trying to get over, is how can you create this psychologically safe environment at work, which you've gone a long way down.
Well, it started at the pandemic, so it's literally at the point that... It's you, Jack.
Maybe it's you. Yeah, problem shared is a problem...
Doubled.
Yes.
Exactly. So it did start then and got progressively worse to a point where we were sat in the pub and he said, I can't do this anymore. I need to leave. I was like, right, okay. And he goes, I need to leave. Do not buy me out. Don't give me anything. I'm out of here. I'm done. Anyway, we went through this motion, this process, this conversation for a number of months to try and work out where Ferg sits, how Ferg does what he does, and what that looks like. And at no point was I not going to not pay him. At no point was I going to buy his shares back. At no point was I going to change any of that. Albeit there were conversations around the what if, for instance. So we had a plan. Anyway, it turns out that there was a really good gap for him to dial back to a couple of days a week.
Yeah.
He now does consultancy on the side. So he does help a number of businesses from an ops point of view. And he's now back in the business on a couple of days doing the events side. He's got a girlfriend. He's bought a house. Literally within a year of him talking to me about that to where he is now, he is a totally different person. But he's so much better for it. And I don't know if that's because he voiced it. I don't know. But that the last 12 months, he's gone from being up shit creek, literally, to being just the happiest person in the world.
But for somebody like yourself who says, you know, you find it difficult to read people and all of that sort of stuff, you read him really well.
I didn't know he was going through it. Actually, I did.
No, but he hid it very well because I didn't know. And I'm very conscious of these things. So I didn't see it at all. So he was fantastic at hiding it, which actually bad, good and bad hiding it. But.
I guess when you spend that much time, I guess you've got, you know, if you've got a wife or a girlfriend, whatever, you'll be able to know when there's something up. Being able to relate to that is the issue. Like, I can see that he was upset because he was crying. It's a visual thing. You go, okay, that's not right. But to actually go, oh shit, so you're that. That's how your mind is. You're that way inclined. You want to do that. I can't understand that. And I'll work with him to try and keep him happy and try and mellow him down or one down. But I wouldn't be able to go, okay, I understand that. Have you tried this?
But there's an element of understanding, isn't there? Because you said, well, there's no way I'm going to buy him out. I'm going to continue to pay him, you know.
Yeah.
So what you were doing was you were saying, this guy's, you know, he's struggling
I guess,
and I'm going to support him. And that was the way that you chose to do it. So there's...
I guess there was. There was also the stability piece, right? Because when you, we had the optics of the business whereby if Ferg, who was MD at the time, suddenly disappeared, people got, the fuck's going on here? So there's an element of making sure that behind the scenes everything's stable, but the optics to the staff are also very, very clear, if that makes sense. There is no issues.
Yeah.
And that's why we didn't want to change too much, was because actually I figured that he'll just get over it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just a blip. He will get over it and it will be fine. And he did. And we, you know, he thanked me and wrote me a really nice card saying, I'm so pleased you're my business partner, all this kind of stuff, which I've kept. But it wasn't strategic in any way. It was just, okay, we'll just take this as it comes, mellow, fine, whatever.
But that's to your credit as much as anything else, isn't it?
Eventually, I guess.
Because I guess you're maybe more conscious of it. And
that's maybe more conscious of it, I guess, yeah.
For him, in him, and also, I guess, other people at work as well.
I guess I don't know other people at work nearly as well as him.
No, but you can spot the signs, can't you, sometimes?
Sometimes you can.
Yeah. If they're hiding it well, like Fergus did.
And I guess you can sometimes. I mean, there's line managers in place that do tell me when there's issues up and such like. But we've got a really good culture in the business anyway. We've got Happy Minds, Happy Lives scheme, whereby actually people talk to each other, to take them out for coffees, whatever it might be, to make sure. And we've got an employee assistance program, 24-hour line kind of thing, so people can anonymously call up these outside bodies and talks about things. So we're pretty good in that sense. I guess this was the only and the first in the business situation whereby there was a genuine issue that would have to be sorted out.
Yeah.
It just so happened it was right at the top.
Yeah. Have you changed your culture as a result of that or done anything differently?
We've put people in different places and we've given people more headspace to an extent and more flexibility. But he burnt out. He had far too much pressure on his plate. He wasn't necessarily hitting the mark he wanted to hit from a personal point of view, excelling in business, and he drowned himself in business because he wasn't happy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I guess, and it's not necessarily for me to say, but I guess we have slightly changed it based on what Ferg went through. But he went through, I think, quite a lot more than I'm saying because I'm not fully aware of the ins and the outs behind the scenes.
Yeah, I would like to get him on.
You should get him on, and I'm sure he'd happily speak openly about it.
Yeah, yeah. But do you think there's a contradiction between the commercial reality of running a business and giving people room for their mental well-being?
Yes, I think there is sometimes.
How do you balance that?
And it's fucking difficult to balance. And I don't think there's a absolute way of doing it because everybody operates very differently. Like for me, if I'm having a really bad time in whatever way, shape or form, I typically will be in the office and smash out as much as I can smash out because I can control that environment. If you know what I mean?
Like you say smash out, you mean productivity work.
Work on something, whatever
not
that
might
be. Not
smashing your laptop or
anything. No. With a big hammer.
Yes, makes you feel better if nothing else.
It would do. I mean, we used to have a dartboard actually and a punch bag, but we don't anymore.
Dartboard, I'd go.
Yeah, we used to put clients that we didn't like on it and throw darts.
No, don't go.
You were on there once.
Oh, sure. On what though? Triple 20?
They just did every single place, so you just never missed it. So I guess that's my coping mechanism, but people have got different coping mechanisms. Some people, and I know individuals in the business who have gone through a tough time recently and in the past, maybe not to the extent of Ferg, for instance, and they'll drown themselves in work, or they won't. They'll take some time off. But people have a very different way of coping.
Yeah.
You just have to have a process in place that is the norm. And then the line managers need to be astute enough to be able to understand how to make that person.
Yeah, there's Lynette Barrett who came on here. She's the chief executive of the National Star.
Right, okay.
And she knows exactly about mental health because a lot of the students that they look after, you know, have those sorts of issues.
Yeah.
And I was talking to her about this and how does she deal with it? And she says, look, you can only go so far, right? You can put all sorts of stuff in place. You can give them all the support that you need. But actually, at the end of the day, you'd need them to do a job. And so that's a really difficult thing to manage. But then you end up having to have difficult conversations with them that says, look, sorry, but, you know, look, we've tried everything. We've really, really tried hard to support you. But actually, we don't think this job is right for you.
Yes.
And then you facilitate and help them, support them to get something else.
Yes.
Which is a way of dealing with it rather than what a lot of people are frightened of is getting fired.
Yeah, and I guess we're pretty good on that. Like, we've extended people's probation and put them on performance improvement programs and whatever else. And we're not a cutthroat business where if you're just not performing on day one, you're going to go. We'll nurture you and take you on that journey. Fundamentally, there's an expectation to deliver the best and results for the client, right? How we do that is entirely up to the prerogative of the line manager or the individual, right? It's not as if we're buying and selling product. It's very, very different.
No, true.
It's a creative business as well. There is an element, there is a lot of strategy and data behind it, and there are some proper strategic thinkers who work very differently to the creatives. But that's in part, the issue is the strategists work very differently to the creatives. So how do you then make that a seamless one-size-fits-all approach? And you can't.
No, you can't.
You just can't.
But I think as long as people are aware that we will support you as much as we possibly can when they come in.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then they hopefully will come to their own conclusions.
It's just about being listened to as well sometimes.
Yeah, it is.
The door is always open, inboxes are always, whatever it might be.
Yeah. You see, the issue for me was at board level was that everybody's really nice outside the board. And then you get in there and shut the door and fucking hell, it's horrendous.
Yeah, I guess we haven't had that confrontation at that level just yet because we haven't got...
You haven't got private equity.
We haven't got private equity. We haven't got VC. We haven't got PE anywhere like that. So we've got an advisory board who have got some really senior people on there. And I love it because they properly interrogate me and nobody else does, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
So I have to answer
to them
every month. At the SLT... Oh, we're good? The SLT...
That was embarrassing. That was my phone.
Yes, it wasn't mine. So
no, shame. I wish it was yours, actually. But anyway, I'll just sort that out. Yeah, sorry.
No.
No, I think you should keep it in. Anyway... Yeah, go on.
I guess we haven't had that fiery approach per se because it's we're not having to answer to money.
Is there a distinction between being challenged and questioned than being bullied?
Yes.
You see, because I found that the boardroom behaviour was a bullying environment, which I think is completely and utterly unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean... I've never been in that situation where you're in a boardroom being bullied, but to have been bullied. So using that...
Yeah, so have I, actually. It's when I was at school.
Exactly. But so using that as an analogy or as an experience, there was no facts, stats, reasoning to bully me, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the boardroom, if somebody is challenging you, there is a reason to that, far as I'm concerned.
I don't think that's right.
No?
Because I think you can question and challenge without being a bully. Why can't you just treat people with respect? Being a bully is just bombarding you with questions. And
is that what you're thinking bullying is? Okay. And I guess it depends on the subjectivity then, really, in that case.
Yeah, because bullying is in the eye of the beholder to a certain extent.
Yes.
You know, if your behaviour is causing me stress, just bloody tone it down a bit, mate.
Yeah.
You know, shouting, pointing fingers, throwing bombs from the sidelines, booing from the stands. You know, it's fucking horrendous, frankly.
Yeah.
And but because they're in the boardroom and they're in a meeting where the doors are closed and it never gets minuted.
Well, we minute everything now. So we actually have my PA sits on our advisory board meetings and minutes that, SLT and minutes that. And I guess that's in part because I like to have someone taking notes, be it AI, which we use a lot of, or just generally someone else in the room.
Would she do bad behaviour, though?
In what sense?
Record it. No, I mean, note it.
Well, I mean, we have, to be clear, never had that. So, I mean, in reality, if there was ever that, it would get to a point where we'd stop it.
Would you stop it there and then?
Yes.
Or?
I'm not going to answer that. I'd probably walk out, to be brutally honest with you. If it got to a point where it was just an unreasonable level of antagonistic kind of bullying, like what is... I'm answering the question, this is it. If you're carrying on and you want more and that is what the answer is, then that's... I get that.
Yeah, but to not let you speak...
I never have that.
You're halfway through... That. No, because I guess you're in charge, you see. That's slightly different.
Yeah, and I don't know what it was like with Jules at the boardroom or whatever.
No, Jules was absolutely not a problem.
Yeah. And no, I meant in terms of when he's talking to the board, if he was interrupted as much. But
yeah, but he could probably deal with it.
And this is the point. Maybe there are individuals within our business at SLT level that maybe are interrupted by me or other members of the team, and we aren't aware of that. Maybe they think that's bullying. I don't think they were.
They might think it's unreasonable. And I guess it comes on to the fact that if you treat people properly, whatever that means, you'll get they become more productive.
100%. And we're going through this exact thing at the moment where we metric our guys from an NPS point of view every month, and we make sure that what we're doing is exactly what they want to be working towards, but also they feel like there's value within the business for them as a place to be.
Yeah.
So we're properly good on our culture. We put a lot of time and money into making that rise. But I don't think I've ever experienced in business, apart from when I don't know what I'm talking about, then I'll get frustrated. But I've never experienced bullying.
No. I have.
Yeah.
And it generally tends to be one accountant to another because they are excessively analytical.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't know absolutely every single thing about your business, then they'll get cross and say,
"Yeah, I can imagine."
They'll roll their eyes.
But especially at PLC level, there's going to be some level of interrogation that is above and beyond.
Interrogation's fine. Look, it's absolutely fine. Mm. You know, but don't bloody keep hammering home when I'm trying to answer a question. You won't let me answer it.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
It's just, you know, that's just decent human behaviour, isn't it? And that's the thing, I think, that I'm trying to, I say expose, I don't know if that's the right answer, but to try and create the right environment where people, like, where I could have actually called it out and said, he's treating me like shit.
So the best thing to do there, ironically, based on what Jeff Bezos has said, going back to how much he fucked us over in the pandemic, but anyway, let's use Bezos for this. He said that the most senior person in the room should always speak last, which we've now implemented in the business.
That's a good idea.
So when we're having meetings or debrief meetings, which we have on a regular basis, the debrief meeting has a debrief document sent out a few days before that everybody populates. So everyone in that meeting populates what they're going to speak about and say, et cetera, which takes out the feeling because they have to write it down and think about it. And then what happens is we go into the meeting and I will always speak last. And that means that I'm A, not tarnishing what they're going to say and what they think, but B, I'm not going to interrupt them because they know they've got the time and the space, right? So when we have these meetings, yes, it takes slightly longer maybe, and yes, I might have a long list of notes that I want to ask them about, but in theory, as you go through it, you should be ticking these notes off because they've been answered.
Yeah.
And then you don't need to interrupt people.
Yeah.
And it works brilliantly, and we've only just started doing it. I learned that on TikTok, and we thought we might as well put it into the business. Why not?
There is a use for TikTok.
Genuinely, and for Jeff, but there you go. That's true.
Yeah, but you see, that is just brilliant, yeah? Because you're giving people space, you're saying, you know, it doesn't become a personal, emotional attack. There's no outburst, there's no anger.
Exactly.
You just, people have the time to say what they want to say, they feel listened to. Yeah. You know,
we debrief all the time, though. I was at a talk with Billy from SES, Who's Dares Wins. Fascinating talk on culture, but also on mindset. And he was talking about how in the military, everybody debriefs after everything. And if they can in the military debrief to a certain level of detail whilst being shot at, why can't you have a constructive debrief in the private sector when you're sat in a comfy boardroom? And that's totally
I know. I'm laughing because that is just so ridiculously... Yeah. Not obvious, but ridiculously simple.
It is, isn't it? So we, as of that evening, literally spoke to Clara, who's our account director, and we put in plan, into place, this debrief thing, which is a really good document. It just so happens that after that we saw the Jeff Bezos way of getting the most senior person to speak last. But before that, it was based on this talk.
Yeah.
And it makes so much sense. And then you have a constructive conversation about what went well, what didn't go well, what we're going to do next time, all this kind of stuff. And in theory, you can move forwards positively without anybody feeling bullied.
Yeah.
And we do those two things. We started doing those two things in December.
I don't know any other organisation that's doing that.
Well, hopefully now thousands will because of your listenership. Millions, my bad.
I shouldn't be laughing at that, should I? No. But it's probably true. Cut that bit out. So I think that's fantastic because I was going to end. We need to sort of begin to wrap up, but I was going to end on what do you think you can do differently or what can be done differently in business? And that is just, I mean, you've sort of almost answered it.
Those are two things that are very, very easy for any business, any sector, any size, any maturity, PLC level or startup, whatever, to just do that.
Yeah.
The bigger you are, the earlier you need to send these documents out.
Yeah, but the trouble, yes, that's true, but the trouble is, sometimes the emotions get the better of people. Mm. And they think, like, and the old, it's the old dinosaurs, actually. It's the young, the ones who are my age, frankly, who sit in boardrooms. Fuck that, I'm not doing that. I want to.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And I get that. And I guess there's different mechanisms for different types of organizations. We are typically quite a young organization by gender, by demographic, but also by maturity of business, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But what you've got, you say you've got a younger demographic. Mm. But what I. The level of business that it tends to be PLC directors, they tend to be old, grey-haired.
But let's just
white.
Be clear. I don't know if that's true because this came from Jeff Bezos. I can't take credit for this. Who is a PLC? Well, they're an enormous organisation, bigger than a PLC, bigger than the Superdry ever were, for
instance. Yeah, it's bigger than most countries.
It's bigger than most countries. He controls most of the world. You know, and if they can, at exec level, at senior level, at whatever level, do that, in an organisation that size, with the variety of age gaps... Any company can.
But doesn't it take the leader, the most senior person in an organisation, to do that?
No, I don't think he came up with it. I don't think he came up with
but
it. I think
but
someone
he
in
advocates
the company,
it, doesn't he?
He advocates it, granted, but I think if it's giving results, why wouldn't you, for instance? You can't come up with every idea.
No, no, true. You see, have I told you about the plastic bag moment?
I'm intrigued.
Right, well, basically, I ask this as the last question, generally, for most people, is... Apart from what you've already said, what is the one thing that you could do in business that would have a relatively small intervention but a major effect? And the reason it's called plastic bag is because if you remember plastic bags in supermarkets, 10p tax disappeared overnight.
Yeah.
And you don't see them anymore.
Yeah. Did you come up with that analogy? The plastic
bag?
Yes,
I did, actually.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's very good.
So
you should do a TikTok about it.
Well, I do when I do my talks, my event speaking, that's how I end. Because I just plant that idea in people and say, what's the one thing that you can do?
Yeah, like that.
Yeah. So what would be the one thing you could do?
Just be seen. Because I have a small office, if that makes sense. My own private office. Because having ADHD, can't concentrate when there's loads of people around me, right?
Genuinely.
Okay. Why I have it. Not because I want to be CEO in a nice boxed office. Be seen. And the reason I say that is because a number of people are sort of, as we grow, don't hear from me, don't speak to me, don't think I'm approachable, whatever it might be. You know, Cape Town office, London office, Cheltenham office... It's not difficult to see these people, be it virtually or in the office, but I often spend time in my box, not opening the door, because I just too busy or just don't want to have to engage in conversation.
Yeah.
So for me, the easiest thing to do is that, just be seen more.
Yeah.
And give people more time.
Yeah. And then they feel part of the business. They've got a relationship with you.
Yeah.
And you hope that they're sufficiently motivated and inspired. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. That's it.
Good. Ollie, thanks ever so
much.
Thanks,
mate.
Honestly.
Thank you.
I've really enjoyed it, actually.
It's been okay.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah. It's been good. No, it's been fantastic.
Oh, that's better. Yeah, cut out that first bit. Just leave the fantastic bit in. Thanks for coming on Just Not Good Enough.
Yeah,
I'm now going to say thanks for coming on The Unseen Battle. Fantastic, great stuff. I'd love to come on your podcast if you decide to do it again.
Yep.
Well, we can make it happen because you've got a studio, haven't you?
We've actually ripped that out now, made it
into
a boardroom. Yeah,
oh.
We had to. That's the issue with growth is you can't have all these lovely studios.
Yeah, that's true.
We had
that's
to make
true.
It into a meeting.
Well, if you're ever up here, come give us a shout and we'll try and get you in again and then you can do it the same to me.
Okay, I'm in.
All right.
So to speak.
Excellent, good. Thanks.
Thanks, Chaz.
See ya. Ta-ra. Bye.